Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back on
of the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining me, as always, from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, man. It's another great weekend of fights, and, you know, we're just looking forward to, I don't know if I'm looking forward to it, but we'll talk about it anyways. Can't wait.
If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. Line up, get in your place, speak to us about the sport of boxing. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing. Let's get to round number one, where I know you're all waiting for the moment. From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the WBC and WBA welterweight titles, it's money again. Floyd Mayweather, 45-0, takes on the rugged, hard-hitting Argentine Marcos Chino Maidana. Your undercard, welterweight co-feature Louis Collazo takes on Amir Khan. In the junior welterweight, the return of the problem, Adrian Broner tries to bounce back from his loss to Maidana in December, taking on Carlos, the one not in jail, Molina. In a super middleweight feature from the money team, Jay Leon, One Love, takes on Marco Antonio Parabon. Gabe, Floyd Mayweather is about 11 or 12 to 1 favorite. In your opinion, are those odds reflective of the type of fight we will get Saturday night?
I think so. I mean, you know, unless Floyd just one day shows up old and he just can't do anything about an onrushing bull, I just don't see how this fight isn't an 11 to 1 type of fight. Maidana's lost before. We've been down this road. He's lost 3 times. To guys that aren't Floyd Mayweather or even close, he's been down before. I mean, now, the Fatalic fight, yeah, that's back in 2009. It's a close fight. Arguably, Maidana won. But, you know, Amir Khan, clear win. Devin Alexander, you know, clear win for both those guys. I just don't see, you know, and a guy that got buzzed by Josecito Lopez before, you know, taking him out in 6. This is not, I know people say, it's strange that they want it both ways with this. That we can at once say Adrian Broner was no Floyd Mayweather and he was kind of a farce and he got exposed by Marcos Maidana, but then at the same time say that that's the fight that earned him the spot. I mean, I guess because it was entertainment value, but I mean, and what you're really earning. I mean, they get the right to lose at a high level on pay-per-view. I guess he did earn that, but I just don't see any way that Marcos Maidana wins this fight unless Floyd shows up just not at his best or is suddenly a really old 37, which he just doesn't appear to be.
In defense of Maidana, I think those fights that you referenced, you could label them as BRG, before Robert Garcia. And it's not that Robert Garcia has completely remade Maidana, but he's made some subtle adjustments. I think he's a little bit steadier in terms of a fundamental standpoint. When he throws his right hand, his back foot doesn't come along with him, so he has much better balance. And I do think he's a little tighter from a technical standpoint. With that being said, he is very heavy-handed. The problem is he's also very heavy-footed. Now, do I think he's going to be in great shape? Yes. Do I think he, quote-unquote, earned the fight? Yes. Do I think he'll be more resolute than guys like Victor Ortiz and Robert Guerrero? Yes, because one thing about Maidana, he is relentless in a very methodical way, but Floyd Mayweather is a young 37 in my view, Gabe. We could say what we want about him. He's in immaculate physical condition, no matter how flamboyant or decadent the lifestyle. From a health perspective, he doesn't drink, doesn't smoke that we know of, and he's never showed up to a fight out of shape. We don't know of any injuries. We could find out about that the day after the fight. But unless Floyd Mayweather has slipped significantly, and right now I don't think there's any evidence of that, I think it's hard to imagine Maidana being able to do what he did against Floyd Mayweather that he will this Saturday night against the real article. I think Floyd Mayweather skates his way to a 12-round decision. I think Maidana is going to be game and tough as always. Gabe, So let's just say we go with the chalk, and I have a feeling you're going to pick Mayweather too. Do you think we'll at least get a few entertaining back and forth moments?
I think so. Well, I mean, it's hard to say because I just think, like you said, he's just so slow of foot. I just think that Floyd is too experienced. He's not going to do the things that made Maidana look so great against Broner. He's not going to go straight back to the ropes. He might actually use his jab, you know, and throw it in doubles and triples as opposed to just a single and move away. Floyd's a powerful enough guy that he can get your respect, added to which he can move very well. Maybe there's a couple moments here. It's very possible. Usually a guy has a couple, at least in the first four rounds with Floyd. But I would say no more than like three, you know, at the most. And I think it's going to be a dominant performance. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a Gotti-esque performance where Floyd really just puts it on him.
You know, I'll say this about Maidana. I know a lot of people are making the comparison because of the nationality to Carlos Baldomir, and I think that's an insult to Maidana. Maidana's had a much better career, much more accomplished, and much more power. Even though Maidana's a natural 140, he still carries up his power to welterweight. And this is a guy with some solid victories. And, again, I don't want to make too much of the Broner fight, as you referenced. Again, let's not have revisionist history. But one thing about Maidana, he has a certain stick-to-itiveness. There's a certain relentlessness to him. And Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, has always been about safety first. He says, hey, I'm not putting on a show and get hurt at the behest of the fans. And the fact that Mayweather is selling Maidana as being so dangerous and such a threat, it lets me know that that's his way of saying this is a great style matchup for me, and I better really do a job of selling this pay-per-view. I think Mayweather will only get hit if he allows himself to do so, and I think Mayweather will do his best to keep this fight in the center of the ring, and again, we go back to foot speed. One guy is still very fleet of foot, still very smooth, very athletic, while Maidana, for as powerful as he is, Gabe, there is a telegraphing of his punches to a certain degree, even though I think Robert Garcia has started to tighten that up a little bit. If you can't hit with any type of real speed or you're not just that much stronger than him, and I've always said Mayweather has very good physical strength, I think it's very tough. Gabe, I don't think it's a surprise. I'm going with Mayweather by wide 12-round decision.
I'm going down that road, too. I was thinking maybe late stoppage, but that's just not following the pattern of Floyd, and I don't think – there's nothing about Maidana that says he's just ready to be taken by a Floyd Mayweather. I see a tough fight in that, you know, Floyd's going to have to be disciplined and keep the fight in front of him, not go to the ropes, not languish too long, and kind of deal with the early – and maybe there's going to be two or three big surges from Maidana in this fight. The initial one – be something around the middle and then something late as he gets desperate. But I think Floyd will be fully in command by round 9. No problem.
Looking at this undercard, if there's one fight that holds any real intrigue is Louis Collazo against Amir Khan. Gabe, knowing the Khan camp the way you do and the way Louis Collazo ended up being the absolute nightmare comeback opponent for Victor Ortiz, are you surprised that Team Khan selected Louis Collazo to come back after what is now essentially a year layoff?
Well, that's the thing. I'm wondering if it is Team Khan anymore. Once you sign with Al Haymon, you're kind of just team whatever Al Haymon says. You know, and by the way, thank you, Al Haymon. So this thing, you know, that they're building here, it doesn't look like – I mean, you know, Khan's already lost a couple times. If you want Mayweather – you're going to have to fight to get there. I think that's just been made very clear to Khan. So I don't know necessarily if it was his choice or if it was just the way it went. Hey, you know, Collazo got the win over Ortiz. You want a shot at Floyd? Go earn it. You didn't want to do it against Devin. Well, now's your big chance. This is a tough fight that I don't think – if they could have, I think they would have avoided it.
I'm going to go with Collazo again, just like I did with Victor Ortiz. I'm not saying Collazo is the modern-day Pernell Whitaker, but if you look at the circumstances, just psychologically, Amir Khan for about 2 weeks thought he had Mayweather. Collazo's a guy that's a spoiler who's always been what I describe as a solid pro. He's not great, but you're going to have to be a pretty good fighter to beat a good version of Louis Collazo, and I think the confidence that he got, even though it's quote-unquote just Victor Ortiz, Victories like that can spur a fighter. And Louis Collazo all of a sudden has a lot of ambition here. We go back to the style. I think Amir Khan, listen, is he still a good athlete? Yes. Does he still have live legs? Yes. Does he have speed and quickness? Yes. Does he have hand speed? Yes. And with all that, there's something missing. I think there's a philosophical bent where him and Virgil Hunter, to me, have never really gotten quite on the same page. And Louis Collazo is not a great puncher, Gabe, but it doesn't take one to rattle the cage of Amir Khan. Order me up the upset special once again. I will order Louis Collazo to win this fight.
I'm actually going along with that one as well. I think Collazo's a guy that's just kind of slowly been working, you know, just kind of getting work in, kind of building his resume. I know he had kind of a bump in the road against Freddie Hernandez. I'm not quite sure what that was. He's won 4 fights since. Nobody expected him except you and I to beat the Victor Ortiz. I think Dave Duenas picked him as well. And he got him out of there. And you see him. He's a shifty guy. So what's an interesting fight is that they didn't want to fight a southpaw, Devin Alexander. They wanted to go straight to Floyd. Now they're stuck with an even cagier southpaw, in a sense, and Louis Collazo, who's fought at a higher weight at 54 and come back down to 47. He's going to be very strong. He's not a guy, I mean, he's been stopped before, but that was also very early on in his career, and his losses have been, some have been disputed. He's just all kinds of problems. He's a roughneck guy. He's not like the hardest hitter. He's not the fastest guy, but he's overall very experienced and skilled. I think he gives Amir Khan problems once he adjusts to the speed, breaks him down in the middle of the fight, and takes command late for a decision.
Gabe, you say the word shifty, and I think that's the perfect way to describe him. Shifty and crafty, and like a lot of southpaws, they could punch off their back foot because I think he's going to lay some traps. And the one thing that Amir Khan has always had a problem with is controlling his speed and not overextending himself or overcommitting. I can absolutely see Amir Khan having a lot of success running into a blind right hook from Collazo that he never sees. So, again, if Amir Khan wins this fight, much credit to him, because I think it would be a good, solid win. Gabe, very simple about Adrian Broner. I know if you shave off the beard, that's probably 10 pounds, but are we sure he's going to make 140 come Friday afternoon as he faces Carlos Molina?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, he looked pretty big. I mean, just seriously ripped. I imagine he's just going to have to dehydrate on down, and he should be fine. But I think the bigger question is, what's he going to be like? Is he going to make the adjustments that he needs to, because it's been a minute since he's really looked like an absolute monster. I mean, Paulie Malignaggi put a lot of hands on him. Marcos Maidana just ripped that cloak of invincibility right off of him and threw it into the crowd and just beat on him for 12 rounds. I mean, he had his moments. He showed some pride in it and some I don't want to lose. But bottom line is he didn't have the whole package. And the way he is explaining it, that he was the next coming. So this fight, you know, a guy like Carlos Molina, I know he's there because he doesn't have a big punch. They're both coming off of losses. But Molina's a technically sound guy with good defense and intelligence. You can install a game plan, and he will try to carry it out to the end. I actually, the more I think about this fight, the more I kind of like the fight, although I'm not going to pick Carlos Molina to win it.
Carlos Molina is a 30-1 dog. I'll make a prediction right now. And it's not exactly the boldest one I've ever made. He'll fight better than that. Carlos Molina, for the last couple of months, has been in San Diego with Carlos Barragan, who I think is a very underrated trainer at the House of Boxing in San Diego. And Carlos Molina, the one thing that's always eluded him is really discipline and work ethic. And I have to tell you, physically I saw him, and he looks very good. And if you see him on the Showtime broadcast a couple of days ago, he looks like a different guy. He doesn't have the chubby cheeks anymore, and he's in great physical condition. Adrian Broner, much like a Lucas Matisse, who we're going to get to in a few minutes, we don't know what he's going to be like psychologically. And there's a reason why Team Broner literally went from the heaviest-handed Molina in Johnny Boy to the lightest in Carlos, because they understand that this is a Fabergé egg that's been dropped, and they have to handle this with care because he might be fragile. I know I've been a critic of some of the odds on some of these Showtime Golden Boy fights. I'm not going to lie to you, but for a 30-1 fight, and I know this is a backhanded compliment, I am actually looking forward to seeing how both Broner and Molina react. Gabe, moving on, round number 2. I got to tell you, Gabe, there's something about the mystique of the StubHub Center in Carson, California. the action. It was a triple header on Showtime. Keith Thurman, third round stoppage of Julio Diaz, running his record to 23-0, 21st stoppage. Omar Figueroa with a split decision in 12 over Jerry Belmontes. And then in what was the main event that stole the night, it's the return of the machine. Lucas Matisse subdues the tough game, John Molina, in 11 rounds. Gabe, I thought Matisse, Molina was going to be a dangerous fight. That's exactly what it was. And Gabe, tell me if you disagree. I think for the first five rounds, I think Matisse still had some doubts, was still seeing the ghosts of Swift, was really thinking to himself, do I want to do this? And to his credit, Gabe, he just flat out steeled himself and decided, you know what, I'm getting my mojo back.
Yeah, I think it would have been a different thing if he would have just gone in there and had no resistance. You know, had just some guy that laid over him. You don't really answer questions that way. And this game is about asking yourself questions and being able to, or having somebody answer them, you know, or ask them of you and being able to answer them. And the very toughest questions you can think of. And in this fight, when he got dropped early on, I think that changed everything for him. All of a sudden, you know, whatever confidence he had or, that first round, it just went right away. And he had to develop it as it went along, and then it happened again, getting dropped. But Matisse, the one thing I'll give him is that he got back up fast. He seemed to be in excellent condition. He just kept letting his hands go, and his straighter, shorter punches and just the more volume, the fact that he just never seemed to get tired, it just wore on Molina. He had that left hook straight to the solar plexus over and over again. It was just – he just kind of, like you said, he kind of just willed himself to oil up the machine and just get going. And Molina, for his part, I think he left a lot of fight on the table. He should have been more active. He should have pistoned his jab, used his strength, not just when they clinched or pushing him around on the inside, but just by powering that jab into his face all night. That's where he lost the fight in many respects, was with the double jab to the chest or the gut or the face that Matisse would use. And it just offset everything John was trying to do and negated him and eventually got him stopped.
I think a lot of that, Gabe, comes from the fact John Molina, for all his inexperience, they've never made up for it with volume. And he's been in a lot of litigation, a lot of pissing
right.
contests with either his trainer and his promoter. And he's like this really raw baseball player who simply doesn't get enough at-bats to really become seasoned. And a lot of things you speak of, you could train all the time, you can spar a million rounds, you could hit the heavy bag for days on end. You could only do a lot of those things you speak of and create muscle memory or instinct by actually fighting. And for a guy that began the game so late, he hasn't made up for all on the back end with activity. As for Matisse, a lesson for all young fighters. What did he get back to? The jab. He was able to corral and control Molina from the outside, use it as a shield as he came in close, and just really relentless and just wore down a bigger, stronger guy. I think Matisse is back. I think the machine had some self-doubt. But I think by the eighth or ninth round, I said to myself, that's the guy I fell in love with last year or the year before. Gabe, Keith Thurman, again, he did what he's supposed to, as Chris Rock would say. But seeing him live and up close the last couple of times, I have to tell you, I'm impressed. We've always known there was speed and power. But I got to give Dan Birmingham some credit because I think we're seeing improved technique, specifically as it relates to footwork and balance.
Yeah, I like a guy that understands his attributes and how to use them correctly. And Keith Thurman, he's an awkward guy. He can punch on the move. He can go backwards and forward. But he would kind of be in danger at times of being a donaire, putting his hands down, not getting back to traditional technique, which Matisse showed, could really fuel an offense. You know, you get that jab going, start to find your rhythm. Everything comes off of it, feints, footwork. You start to get bigger shots in behind it. Thurman's really understanding that and understanding defense. This fight, it's almost like it didn't happen in some regards, just because it ended so strangely. But they could say it was a rib all they want, but I just think that it was very evident in the fight that Julio Diaz is at that time, that the time is passing by, the miles have caught up, every punch seemed to affect him. He just didn't have that kind of daring that he used to, that look on his face that said he actually was here to win. And he just, I think he took a couple shots early and it was, I don't have it tonight. And I think that his corner wisely got him out of there and kept his respect as well.
If you are an older fighter who is openly talking about retirement and has one foot out the door, Keith Thurman is not going to tap you on the shoulder and escort you out. He will shove you out the door. And I think the corner, I don't blame them for stopping it. If he had a busted rib, why let him take a protracted beating at that point? Gabe, almost Figueroa won, but boy, I don't want to say he got exposed, but geez, he certainly looked vulnerable, didn't he?
Yeah, the footwork. My goodness, the footwork is just everything, though. You know, he just looked like an unformed mass. I don't know what it is, it's conditioning or what. It took a while to get going, and then he just kind of a lot of sloppy, like, I'm just going to make up for all this with volume. It looked like a makeup performance of some kind. And a guy with movement, a guy that's there to win. It was a tough fight, and, you know, that one score that had it so wide, it was like 118-110. What fight was that guy watching? It was a tough fight. And it, you know, could have gone either way. Figueroa needs to reevaluate some things. I know he's got a long layoff and everything, but he's a kid. He should look in better physical condition than he is. He should have more bounce to him. And he kind of reminded me of a Chavez Jr. performance, where, you know, he kind of maybe showed up big, struggled with the weight. It was just, eh. He just looked all kinds of mediocre to me.
Gabe, I thought Figueroa won the fight. I thought he pulled away, and it was really kind of an indictment on Belmontes. He just started to really – it went from boxing to a full-blown retreat, but I got to be honest with you. As soon as Oscar and Richard were sitting together and ignoring each other, I kind of lost all interest in that fight and was watching across the ring to see that dynamic between those two. But Omar Figueroa on this night looked like a very beatable guy, and this might be a bold statement. Some people might think I'm nuts and I know the history. If that version of Figueroa faces the version of Jorge Linares I saw March 8th, I think Linares beats that guy.
Yeah, I think he's there for the taking. I mean, I don't know what the issue is with him. He just looked lethargic, and it may have been that he blew up too much, and it was all about trying to make weight. But again, he's a young kid, and you know, there's just maybe he's grown past it, or maybe there's just bad habits there. I'm not sure, but I would agree with you that Linares looks like a guy that actually would give him a lot of trouble. I think anybody that really stuck to their game plan, and Belmontes, he had the fight there for him to take it. A little more energy, a little in and out movement, work behind the jab, mix in the occasional right hand. And I really think he could have kept Figueroa just following him around, but he just didn't. His offense kind of went away, as you said, and it just kind of it went from a fight to what it went to. But still, 118-110, come on now.
But, Gabe, remember this also about Belmontes, really a natural featherweight. And I thought the difference in size and strength, I think that's one of the reasons why he took the strategic tack that he did in the second half of the fight. Let's get to a couple of tweets before we hit the phone lines again. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Here's one from Joshua. Golovkin-Chavez update, where Matisse goes from here, and Brandon Rios' return. As it relates to Bam Bam Rios, Bob Arum told me today, July 12th, which coincidentally is the same day as Canelo Lara, so we'll see if that actually comes to fruition. Golovkin-Chavez, from what I understand, is still being worked on. It's not dead. It's not finalized. It's kind of in that place where they're still negotiating it. And where Matisse goes from here? Gabe, do you have any thoughts? Cause I know he wants Danny Garcia, but it takes two to tango, and quite frankly, Danny Garcia looks like he has other things on his mind.
Yeah, I mean, Garcia's moving up. So, you know, unless Matisse wants to chase him up there, which I think maybe he can wait around and pick up the belt, see what he can do, picking up some money with the title defenses, cement himself at 140. Maybe eventually as he gets bigger, outgrows the weight, move up and chase Danny. But maybe it's not a great matchup for him. I don't know. To me, that just seems kind of far-fetched to me, or just not in immediate plans, I should say. I'm not really sure where I'd like him to go. I mean, I guess he can't really fight, Manny Pacquiao, obviously. Is Ruslan Provodnikov in the cards? I don't know, because Chris Algieri is actually kind of a tough matchup for him, not in terms of experience, but in terms of style. You have to look around the Golden Boy stable. Lamont Peterson, maybe? Also in the WBA, other title holder, but that's top rank again, Jesse Vargas. So I don't know. Hank Lundy, kind of a stay-busy kind of fight. What would you go with him?
Any of those names, listen, if you can't get the fight you want, just don't languish. Fighters fight. And as Larry Merchant always says,
that's the thing.
Fights make fights. Just build a career. If you're not going to cash the lottery ticket, get to damn work. And that's the one thing I said about Matisse. He's been willing to do that in the past. Here's one from Louie. What are the rumor fights for the Canelo-Lara undercard? Gabe, what I've heard is that Leo Santa Cruz could be on this show, and there's also the possibility of Devin Alexander against Jesus Soto Carras. You know, that wouldn't be a bad lineup, but I'll say it again, and I don't want to belabor this point, but if you want to have so many pay-per-views and you quote-unquote stack these undercards, Gabe, what does that do to your HBO or Showtime subscription?
It dilutes it. It makes it so that you get stuff like we got this weekend, which wasn't – it was okay. I mean, the fights were more competitive than we thought. But, it's just you're going to end up with not really any stars that you're seeing on regular cable. I mean, you can make an argument there aren't really that many stars. But it just doesn't – to me, it just dilutes the market. The more you do that, and ask the fans to fork out a ton of cash that maybe they don't have. I'm just to me, calling this card, like the moment, stacked, saying it's an expensive undercard and this and that, that just, I mean, come on, you know, I guess garbage is a stack. I mean, that's possible.
All right, let's take one more tweet here from Robert Buffett, too. What do you think happens after the Mayweather fight with Oscar/Richard? Split? Gabe, if you read my article this morning, is there any doubt it is now Rogue Schaefer? And Rogue Schaefer either wants to be fired or get the hell out of there by any means possible because he feels as though he has another gig lined up.
Yeah, that's the sense I get. I'm very curious to know about his contract. Is there a no-compete clause, and is there something that negates that? You know, is getting fired, because Oscar's the kind of guy that you can lure him into doing something wrong, I think, or saying something wrong. And so I'm wondering, by his boldness, is Schaefer found some sort of loophole and is hoping that he just gets fired and is able to go over to Al Haymon and say let's start a promotional company. Who knows? But I expect them to split after the pay-per-view. I just don't see how you can run a company that way.
Agreed. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get to the phone calls.
In the 703, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good evening.
Good. Who is this?
Good evening.
This is Luis from Baltimore.
Luis from The Wire.
Hey,
welcome aboard.
Love that show. Hey, good stuff. I kind of called in a little later, so I don't know if you guys talk about Molina and Matisse. I'll give you my spiel right now. I really got excited when I saw that fight. My one buddy hyped me up. On Sunday when he was talking to me about the fight, because I missed it on Saturday night, but as I watched it on Sunday evening, I mean, it wasn't entertaining, but, you know, honestly, Molina is a guy that, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know him. I mean, and Matisse has some issues with him, and I don't see him as an elite guy, so I don't know what it is that I saw on Saturday night. I mean, I saw an entertaining fight, but
Louis, let me just say
this.
No one's ever called him elite, but he's good enough to have beaten Hank Lundy, who's not a bad fighter, and Mickey Bay. So is he going to be in the Hall of Fame? Probably not. But is he an outright tomato can? Certainly not. I just think Molina was a dangerous guy. If you saw them physically – and Molina flat out told me last week, he goes, Steve, anyone that thinks I'm the smaller guy is being absurd. And as you saw them, Matisse looked like a 140-pounder. Molina damn near looked like a junior middleweight in that ring. And I've talked to Joe Goosen about this in the past. I said, who's the hardest puncher you've ever worked with? And he said, Steve, Corrales is the cleanest, most accurate guy with power. But he says no one has the brute strength in terms of their punching power like John Molina.
So you're saying, I guess, with that, I take it as Matisse just came back with a solid win on his resume.
I think based on the fact that his air of indestructibility was shattered to a certain degree by Danny Garcia, and the fact that there was talk that he was whispering about retirement, changes in the corner, Gabe, those are all little things, but collectively, if you think about it, these things do add up.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, John's a quality fighter who's always going to be there. He's durable. Obviously, to get him out of there, it's going to take a lot. And his power is legit. He carried it to 140 and put down a guy twice off of kind of almost glancing shots. You know, just very casual. It wasn't a big effort to get him down. It kind of shows. I mean, anybody I've ever seen that worked with him in the gym has talked about the power of John. I think in some ways, though, like you're right. Like he's always reminded me of a Mike Alvarado. He's a former wrestler who it took some time to develop him, but he didn't have enough fights. So he slowly, I think this was one of the better versions I've ever seen of John. He was on his toes. He was using his jab at times. But one thing I noticed, too, in this fight is that he doesn't pick off punches with his hands very well. He's not very good at, like, parrying and coming back. He's either blocking or he's attacking, or he's just getting hit flush. That's something he needs to work on in the future, is getting a little more relaxed and rolling with things, but picking shots off with his hands. Because Matisse was just powering right through the jab because he'd be tentative and he'd get through his guard and with that jab and then just unload on him. I think there's a lot of things. This is a very good win.
Louis, let me just put it to you this way.
Yes, sir.
All I know is Adrian Broner's people had first crack at Johnny Molina. They didn't want none.
Mm-hmm.
Really that simple.
Hey, now you mentioned Adrian Broner. I think you guys got to – he mentioned he wants to look at Matisse, huh?
Well, are we sure about that? I mean, that I've never actually heard those words from his mouth. And I have a question. When a guy goes up in weight and is as muscular and as big as Adrian Broner, who believed that, hey, I could just bypass 140 and I'm going to be a welterweight, now you're asking him to come down 7 pounds. Again, let's see what he looks like on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, there's so much time, I guess. But do you guys talk about Collazo Amir Khan?
Well, we're both on the Collazo bandwagon. We think he will beat Amir Khan. Louis, one question for you before we let you go. Are
yes,
you
sir.
Buying the Moment pay-per-view this weekend?
I'm being coerced by my one buddy who's also a hardcore fan. So I told him we should boycott the pay-per-view. But he's more pro. Look, man, whenever he has a chance to see Mayweather lose, he's going to pay for it. So I guess I'll probably be watching it with him and chime in.
All right. Well, Louis, as always, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. If you want to call in, there's a phone line open, 347-215-7598. And, folks, tell us, are you purchasing Mayweather-Maidana or are you listening to it on the radio? Gabe, who's next?
In the 508, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Hi,
how
you doing, guys? This is Junior from South Texas.
Junior, welcome aboard.
Hey, hi. Well, I'm listening on the radio. I work in the oil field, so we don't have a lot of cable TV, so I'm going to be watching it, listening it through my phone.
Okay.
So... But I won't even pay for it still. It's not a fight that I will pay for. I'll pay for Cotto and Martinez because that sounds like a very competitive fight. So that's worth that. You know, that's worth some of the money that you know to dish out to watch the fight. But I'm more interested in the co-feature with Amir Khan and Collazo because I was just thinking about this the other day, like. I remember Amir Khan, the last thing he fought Southpaw was that guy from Scotland or Ireland, I forgot who, but he looked terrible, and, you know, he looked so bad, like, he didn't look like the superstar that everybody was, putting him out to be when he first came out, and I just think that might be like that, it might be similar to that situation again, like, where he's going to just look like, if he win, it's going to be like an ugly win, but, I mean, I think Collazo might be able to just pull it out, because he just has all that experience on him.
I don't disagree.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, if you're not going to fight for over a year, I know there are some managers and trainers that have told me in the past, Steve, we're not messing around with southpaws. And Louis Collazo is your classic, crafty, smooth, well-conditioned, technically sound left-hander. I'm actually a little bit surprised that they took this fight.
Yeah, I don't know the impression that
it was forced on them, you know, that it was kind of like, this is the fight you're getting. Because it just, this is not the guy you want to face.
Yeah, I just mainly they just overlooking that him. He's kind of feather fisted, but he makes up with it with, you know, with everything else. You know, he just doesn't have any power. If you give him a little bit of power, then I think he'd be like a really, you know, top tier guy.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
Gonna see. I think momentum is very big here. I know sometimes momentum can be a myth and it's all just a cliche, but when you get a certain victory on a big stage or something that's significant, like Collazo did against Ortiz, and then again, we said it beforehand, that was a very ill-advised move. That gives you a certain amount of confidence. And Collazo, whether he's being delusional or not, believes, hey, another win or two, and I'm in the Mayweather sweepstakes. To me, that is an incredible carrot to have in front of you. And I think Collazo is much more assured of himself than Amir Khan, regardless of the rhetoric coming from Khan or Virgil Hunter.
I like to see that. I like to see Collazo versus Mayweather. I mean, that'd probably be the most competitive fight since Cotto.
Yeah, it might be. And by the way, Junior, the guy that you're referencing is Paul McCloskey, and you're right. He absolutely looked dreadful that night in Manchester. It was actually a sixth-round technical decision, and I think we're all very fortunate that they clashed heads.
It was a really, really ugly cut, and I was watching with my friends, and you know, we were just all talking about how bad he looked. He just looked terrible, like he just didn't know what to do. You know, they were just hugging and pushing.
It was kind of an off-brand fight for him, too, because he left Alex Ariza. Remember, that was around the time that they had the big row about going in the hotel room and getting the contracts. So that was a different strength coach that was actually working with Amir Khan for that fight. And then right after that, they reconciled.
All right, so listen, Junior, we got to get going here. Thanks for the call, okay?
I think so, guys.
That opens up a phone line, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
503, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Tyler from Oregon. I have a couple questions. One, what's up with Mikey Garcia? I know he's being paid really well by HBO and Bob Arum for his kind of, you know, he doesn't have, the best style. He's not the most exciting guy. He's still, more exciting than Andre Ward. And it seems like he's being groomed for the one to take out Pacquiao. So I don't know, what his deal is with Bob Arum, why he's trying to leave him. It seems like Bob Arum's doing at least a B-plus A job with him. So what's the deal with him?
Well, let's lay out the facts here. In the last 2.5-3 years, Mikey Garcia has made, I believe, 8 appearances on HBO. I can't remember a single fight that was anywhere close to being anything less than 3 or 4 to 1. In fact, against Burgos, he was about an 11-to-1 favorite, and he got paid $750,000. My God, this Bob Arum, when is someone going to stop all this exploitation, Gabe?
I don't really understand it, and it's strange to watch it unfold, and you kind of see the same thing going on. I mean, it seems to be a tight-knit group up there. But then somebody will ask Robert Garcia, the trainer and brother of Mikey, you know, did you know any of this was going on? No, it's the first I've ever heard of it. I just think that there's more, that this is the tip of the iceberg. I just don't understand how you would feel that you're being exploited. I mean, I guess he's not getting to pick the fights that he wants to, but I mean, I just don't understand why that's a problem if you've been moved this way. You've even been on HBO a bunch of times fighting guys that you're absolutely going to beat and getting very well paid for it. What's the issue?
I think he becomes this year's version of Andre Ward. And Andre Ward is this year's version of, Andre Ward. But I think he's going to learn a lesson in the business of boxing. And I've talked to people who have no horse in this race who have gone over the case file, and they tell me that Garcia is a heavy, heavy underdog, that he basically has no chance of toppling Top Rank. And one of the issues that they're going to run into is the jurisdiction, because this lawyer of his, who I'm assuming is making a pretty good amount of money from Mikey Garcia, can spout off about California state laws. The only problem is that contract is in Nevada. And I think that's going to be a very, very big issue. But out of sight, out of mind, I think that they're going to figure out, Mikey Garcia, if you don't fight guys like you, you'll watch fighters who do, and it's next man up. He'll be quickly forgotten about, much the way Andre Ward has been.
Well, there's a nice seat next to Yuri Gamboa, you know, ringside for other people's fights, so they can just sit there next to each other. Because I think Gamboa hit his quota already by being on camera three times during the last card. So.
And, anything else we could do for you?
Yeah, and one more thing. Where do you expect Deontay Wilder to go next? I heard you guys mention, like, you want him to fight, like, Tony Thompson, and it kind of seems like he might be trying to go for the winner of Stavern Ariola. I don't know. I want to... Like, one of my top ten fights, I want to see him fight, like, Klitschko within the next year or so.
Gabe?
I wouldn't do that. I mean, I just think Wilder's got a ranking. He's got that nice record. He doesn't have experience. And, I mean, I don't know. Did you think you saw anything in Vladimir that said he's ready to be taken in that fight? You know, over the past week. And granted, I mean, the guy is not on the level of a Deontay Wilder. But still, I mean, Vladimir doesn't look old. He looks like he's able to fight at a fast pace for any weight, much less heavyweight. His punches look accurate. He looks in tremendous shape. And Deontay, I mean, he hasn't been taken deep. I haven't seen him punched very hard other than by Harold Sconyers, who put him down. That was early on in his career. I just think that there's a learning curve here that he hasn't gone through. A Derek Chisora would be somebody I'd be interested in seeing him face. Even a Glasgow would be an interesting fight. But for him to go to the winner of a Stavern and Ariola, I think it's a very risky, dangerous move for Deontay Wilder.
Risky always makes better fights. Thanks, guys.
You know what? I agree. I'm not here to manage guys. I want to see Deontay Wilder against someone with some power and that could actually touch him. And as it relates to Klitschko, and I said this on Twitter on Saturday night, after he blew out Alex Leopai, as expected, I don't think it's all Klitschko's fault that they're not fighting great guys because there's nobody out there, but I need him to start fighting, at least for my own edification, guys who I can at least look up to his neck or chin, because if you're not at least 6'4", 6'5", I think you almost have no chance of beating this particular version of Vladimir Klitschko. Listen, thank you for the call, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, you made an interesting point about all these people that were ripping Klitschko for their level of competition after the Leopold fight, which was on ESPN. Gabe, you made a great point. The Brown Bomber, who was considered no worse than the second or third greatest heavyweight of all time, didn't they call his roster of championship defenses the Bum of the Month Club?
They did, and I mean, I'm sorry, but there's on every champion with a long reign, there's going to be those guys that just aren't that good. I mean, it's not, you know, what is it, defense number 16? There hasn't been 16 guys that were really going to challenge him. You know, it's just the way of the business. The rankings are what they are. You can only fight who's available, and he's starting to enter in to a very live period. You know, there are fights that I would absolutely like to see him in. Will those guys step up? I don't know. I mean, Stavern and Ariola, we're going to get that fight, the winner of that. And I think that's going to be a really good fight. But Wilder, to me, he was just not quite ready. The thing with the Klitschko's, I just don't understand it. They actually knocked their mismatches out for the most part. Okay, the Povetkin fight was awful. That was just not good at all. And it was reminiscent of that Sam Peter fight with all the holding as well. But in between, he's knocked out a lot of guys. He's been dominant. I mean, he's been every bit as entertaining as a Floyd Mayweather on some level, except he actually knocks his guys out. And he's not charging me pay-per-view to see him. So I'm good with the Klitschko's. I think people need to lay off a little bit. It's an American-centric thing. If he was a white guy from Iowa, we'd love his ass.
Like I said, corn-fed white bread, but he's more Ivan Drago than Tommy Morrison. I think there's an issue of perception, but he's 62-3. And I think the three losses really hold him back in terms of being upper echelon. But if you look at the consistency, the professionalism, and all that other stuff, and the fact that they've dominated this era, and I think the Klitschko's have been cursed in one respect, that the main challenger to each other happened to have the same mother. They were brothers. It's almost unprecedented. So then they couldn't ever really say, well, we knocked out everybody. But I think the Klitschko's just have to be given credit for just how professional they have been, and they've been great ambassadors for the sport of boxing. Gabe, Kiko Martinez, TKO in 7 over Hozumi Hasegawa. Just some of your thoughts on this fight. Kiko Martinez looks very, very strong, doesn't he?
Boy, he doesn't get tired. Guy just throws a lot of punches, you know. It's nonstop, relentless kind of pressure. Reminiscent of like Giovanni Segura when he finished out Ivan Calderon. What I like about him is he just gets low, he commits to your body, and he just keeps going and going and going. And, you know, Hasegawa, I don't know, maybe he's turned the corner a bit in his career. You know, he's been stopped three times. He's lost 5. And he's just, he's been on a string of wins, but he's the kind of guy that's he's gone to some wars. He's been stopped by some good punchers. And I couldn't help but think in this one that he just didn't quite have a full tank in terms of everything, of want to and physical conditioning. And, man, Martinez just ran right over him.
Gabe, Jose Fito Lopez looked much better than he did against Mike Arnautis in stopping Aaron Martinez. Interesting ending to the fight. Martinez gets drilled with the left hook, and he turns his back, and Jack Reese stops the fight, and Aaron Martinez is protesting. Gabe, I think it's very simple. If you turn your back after getting hit like that, that's a white flag. I don't think Jack Reese had any other choice but to call the fight.
I agree. He's like, you turn your back on the fight. You know, that's just, that's you know, the way it is, man. I mean, that's, you capitulated. I kind of wondered if he realized that he did it or not, though. It was strange because he took 2 lefts to the body, and then Lopez came up with a left to the face and right through his jaw, and then that was what kind of, he took it, and then he turned around into the corner and kind of guarded the back of his head. It might have just been one of those where he just got hit so hard he thought it might have been a headbutt or something else and was asking for a foul. But, you know, I always think in those situations, too, if a guy has gotten hit so hard that he has no idea, he's arguing about something that actually didn't happen, then you call the fight because he has no idea what's going on.
Reality is, if you allow guys to turn their back and essentially get a timeout, then anytime anyone gets it hard to just turn their back and say, hey, I just turned my back, I'm sorry. If you can't keep your body in front of your opponent and you have to resort to that, then perhaps it's time to call it a day. Let's get back to the phone lines. If you want to join in, 347-215-7598.
650, you're live on the next round. 650.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas.
Good, who is this?
Afternoon.
This is Jess from the
Jess,
Bay Area.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
First of all, I think that Deontay Wilder should fight the winner of the Irish Mikey Perez fight, the Brian Jennings. That would be a good test for him. My question is, I think after, you know, numerous attacks of people attacking Andre Ward, he finally posted on his Twitter that he does want to fight, and he asked Dan Goosen, since December.
Oh, the message. Are you talking about the message he put out?
Yeah, I tweeted him Saturday night and gave him a little shit, and he, I think he responded to that tweet. Well, he said, he told me to watch my mouth, which was kind of funny.
Wow, he didn't tell you to stay in your lane? Here's the issue, Jess, again, and you know me, I'm just a huge Andre Ward fan. Andre Ward telling a promoter who he's trying to leave, who's gone to litigation more than once, that's like telling a wife that you're in divorce proceedings with, saying, honey, why don't we start planning our summer vacation? He has no clue how this business runs, and I've talked to people that have been in similar situations. There is no realistic way that you can go to a network, right, and say, hey, this guy is suing me, I may not have his services, but give me a date and let's negotiate a deal. What world is Andre Ward living in?
Oh, man, okay, so there isn't a shot. I was going to ask, who would he fight?
I have no idea, and let's take a look at this realistically. We're basically now in the May. I believe the arbitration hearing with Ward and Goosen took place about 2 weeks ago. and it'll take 30 to 45 days for a ruling to be handed down. So let's say we go into early June. You know the way this business is run and the way the schedule is set at the premium cable level. As of right now, the earliest he could fight, the way I look at it, is mid-October.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
And be honest, do you really give a damn if Andre Ward fights at this point?
No. No. just the worst managed fighter of all time. The worst managed fighter. God, that's unbelievable.
You know what? And I'm not even so sure I blame his manager. When it's all said and done, Gabe, Andre Ward's a control freak. Isn't this really on him?
His career. You know, and on some level, you know, I could look at what Danny Dixon did with him, and they got him on cable. They got him into the Super Six, and he was able to get home field advantage. However, he was able to do that, but he managed it, and then he was able to win it. Have they turned him into a draw? I don't know. I mean, I think the fighter on some level has to meet the promoter halfway. I mean, I think Dan probably could have done him. I don't know, done a little bit better job. I mean, he's the last gold medalist, and he's not a household name. But I have to also think, like, it was Max Kellerman went on his rant on the Fight Game about it. And you know, I think he's entertaining, and this and that. And that's, you know, it's like we're in a bar. If I have to try to convince you in more than three sentences that a girl is attractive, guess what? She's not attractive. And that's Underwood fighting. And so that stuff kind of drives me nuts. And when Max Kellerman goes, you know, what's not to like? And I know Andre, and I would say this to him. You've got a very dry personality. I would start there in terms of what's not to like. I'm not calling him stupid. I'm not calling him anything like that. But he's not the most gregarious guy on the planet. Even Oscar, as kind of awkward as he was, he smiled and was kind of engaging. Tito Trinidad didn't speak English, but you knew he seemed to be a gregarious, fun guy. Andre has got this kind of looking down his nose attitude. Virgil Hunter's got the exact same attitude. It's no surprise that he's his teacher from a very young age. They're very defensive, and no one knows the way we know, but everybody keep out because we want to keep our secrets. And that's why he's not a star. Tom Cruise is one of the most engaging human beings on the planet, as weird as he is, apparently. But the guy shakes your hand and smiles at you and wants to know who you are. That's why he's a star. Andre Ward, you know, doesn't want to. He's just very defensive and very stay in your lane. That's not how you engage.
Gabe, I disagree with you about Dan Goosen. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, he's done a 10. I mean, first of all, I got him to the Super 6, 1. He has an Indian casino to him. Every fight's tried to be in a major venue. Last I checked, it's not Dan Goosen getting injured. Dan Goosen's getting him very, very good money on HBO. It's not Dan Goosen suing himself so that a fighter fights basically less than Bernard Hopkins. That's not on Dan Goosen. You say Andre Ward needs to meet him halfway. He hasn't even met him a quarter of the way. I mean, seriously, we have a fighter who can't stay healthy and keeps suing. You can't promote that. And he's a boring fighter on top of it with a bad personality.
Wow.
Well, that's just my opinion. Yeah, so Jeff, anything else?
No, I think that's it, but I'm going to be at the Stavern-Areola fight, and I will be buying Steve Kim a beer or six.
Yeah, and by the way, though, did Andre Ward, when he told you to watch your mouth, did he block you also?
No, well, you know, then I replied, and I included you, and I just said, hey, I said, hey, Steve, he still has some fight left in him, huh?
I guess I missed that. I must have been ringside in Carson. You know, with guys that are actually fighting?
Right.
Imagine that. Yeah. All right, listen, thanks for the call, and I'll see you in a few weeks, okay?
All right, thanks, dude.
Once again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 214, you're live on the next round. 214.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well.
Speaking of Andre Ward, I know Carl Froch and Groves are having a fight this month. And I was wondering, do you think this is a Carl Froch's like last fight?
Do I think this is Carl Froch's last fight? I mean, I think it really just depends on how it pans out. You know, if he wins, I think he's at that place where he's starting to look at the door and go, you know, I could bank all that I've made and just walk away. But you know, it's a tough game to walk away from. And if he wins in fine fashion, you know, he's able to get the stoppage sooner, let's say, why wouldn't he come to America, maybe fight, you know, do a rematch with Andre Ward, look into a fight with, if it happens, the winner of Triple G and Chavez Jr. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for him. But he did look like an older guy to me in that last fight, even though he did come up, pulling Steve back on here. I wouldn't say that it's going to be his last fight. I mean, it's possible. He'd have to really fall pretty far off, pretty fast. Steve, is that
guys,
you?
Gabe, I think the situation with Frock is very simple. He's at that money-making stage of his career where he says, wait a minute, this has been a long career. I'm going to start cashing in with the biggest events. And certainly the Groves rematch, I think there was public pressure that he had to make that fight. And if he gets past it, which is certainly no guarantee, I think he looks stateside at that point because now there's no pressure for him to give Groves this rematch. And I think he looks squarely at the winner, again, knock on wood, of Golovkin-Chavez.
That's the fight. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a no-brainer in terms of action. Cable networks are going to be fighting over it. It's just the fight, you know, I would hope. I mean, there's always the Andre Ward rematch if they pull him out of mothballs by then, you know. that fight, I don't know if it's completely lucrative for Frotch, but and I don't think it's actually as fun as for the fans as the Chavez Jr. I mean, you could maybe save that the Ward rematch for the grand finale. Who knows?
And to be honest with
maybe
you,
by then it'll be a 3-year layoff by then.
To be honest with you, I got to go with Groves. I think Groves is going to take this one. I think he's going to actually knock Frotch out.
Wow. Just remember this, though. I don't disagree, and me and Gabe are among the very few that believe Groves is going to be a stern challenge the first time because of his speed, quickness, and a very educated left hand. All that being said, even though he dominated two-thirds of that fight, just remember this. You let that fight go another 10 to 15 seconds, there is no controversy over the knockout.
True.
Is there anything else we can do for you?
I know that would be all. I thank you guys for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you. And please join us again. 347-215-7598. And Frotch Groves will be on HBO on May 31st. Gabe, interesting situation in Russia, and this is like your field of expertise. Guillermo Jones gets popped for an illegal substance against Denis Lebedev. Now, first of all, I didn't know that they were doing all this extra testing. Was this selective prosecution here against a visiting fighter in Russia?
No, I think it's what's necessary.
Okay.
What I've been saying, I mean, first off, I think these days in world title fights, if you're going to be fighting for a title, there needs to be, and I've had a few people reach out to me to kind of start discussing this, but there needs to be a universal rules among the sanctioning bodies that if you got a belt, you're in random testing. And hopefully by the end of the year, something like that starts to really take effect. If you've popped positive and you've done it for a diuretic, which really could be a twofold situation, you could be just using it to dilute whatever drug you were doing and, you know, dilute the sample and thus mask it. Or you could be just taking it to, you know, to cut weight. So you can, you know, fight at a certain weight. Either of those are illegal. Once you pop positive, you should be, especially if it's going to be a rematch, you should be in a random testing program, at least for a year. It's not for the rest of your career. It's probably not the first time when you get caught. So they got to make sure that it's the last. So I really appreciate and applaud the WBA for what they did of pulling the sanctioning, doing what they could. They pulled their belt out. They unsanctioned the fight. And that kind of just got the little domino effect rolling. It was well done by then.
Okay, hold on. We got a demand here. Our boy Sean, the Gator from the 954, punch him up before he goes crazy, please. Gabe?
In the 954, you are live on the next round. Sorry about that. I was on
Sean, are you there?
Damn, you got me holding them for an hour like a peasant. What's going
on
here?
Gabe, this is all Gabe's fault. I mean, we're team players, but this is all Gabe's fault. No, don't put me into this, Sean.
Wow.
Okay, Sean, right off the bat, are you buying the moment or are you listening on the radio this weekend?
Steve, there's only one Super Bowl in my opinion, and it isn't this weekend. No, I'm not buying it. And I feel like the fact that they're saying it's a great card just makes me not want to buy it even more. Because it,
Sean,
it
do you agree with me that Floyd is engaging in the hard sell? Sean, do you agree with me that Floyd is engaging in the hard sell a little bit too much as it relates to Madonna?
All I know is, Steve, that I listen to you guys in one other show when I'm at work and whatnot, and it seems like a lot of different people are kind of like whatever. I mean, this whole show, you guys haven't even been talking about Floyd. There's been a couple of comments, mostly about Collazo and Khan. Not much about Floyd. Truthfully, I think everybody just caught on to the act, and it is what it is. So I they're probably going to see the results. The numbers won't lie. So we'll see after this. Showtime will get scared like they did after Guerrero.
Sean,
and they'll force
lie,
a fight.
But they'll lie about the numbers.
That's true.
Well, there it is. Yeah, I
that's why. That's why Richard Schaefer has a job, guys.
Yeah, I mean, he understands how to get people to kind of continue to buy garbage. I mean, Floyd has been, you know, not to denigrate the fighters, but this isn't a pay-per-view worthy card. All these fights, Broner versus Molina, totally makes sense on, you know, on Showtime, regular boxing. All these fights do. They're not. This isn't, you know, Revenge of the Rematches. This isn't the way pay-per-views used to be when it was the Super Bowl and we were getting some value for our dollar. They put boxing fans in a situation where they do feel like they're justified in watching these things on the radio because the product just isn't there. And I hope the numbers reflect it. This is an 11-to-1 fight that you're charging people at a base of, what, $70 to watch? That doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know,
guys, let me just say this. Guys, let me just make this statement. I got a budget in terms of what fights I can go to out of town. I'm not going this week. I did go to the Canelo Mayweather fight back in September. I am going to go June to Martinez Cotto because I think that's an unbelievable event. Most of my friends are going to be in Vegas, so I'm not going to be able to go to the usual suspects place to watch it on pay-per-view. But I'm actually going to probably go to a movie theater and watch it because I've always wanted to do that, write a story about it. And, you know, to me, it may be different, but I felt like this is the type of event to kind of try it out. It's not an indictment of the moment, but it says something about what I think of it.
Steve, it's fun. I've been there for I've been to the movie theaters for pay-per-view. It's fun.
Ah, well, I can't wait to do it. So, Sean, anything on your mind?
Yeah, I have two other points. First of all, guys, 2 weeks ago I went to the UFC in Orlando, and there were 18,000 people there, and it did a $2 million gate. So I need some – what's the problem here? I mean, you know what I mean? Why? I feel like there's a market there. It certainly felt like it when I was there. Boxing could come there and do some things.
Listen, when Cotto was there, it also did very well. And I don't think there's any doubt based on the fact that Felix Verdejo was placed on a show there a couple of weeks ago in a small ballroom. I think he might be the next guy off the island to kind of carry those markets left by Cotto.
Yeah, my sister lived in Orlando for a couple of years, and I could tell you that there's a pretty strong Puerto Rican population out there.
Yes, there is, absolutely.
And it's a big city. And the other point I wanted to get to, guys, I feel like a lot lately there's so many fighter and manager, fighter, promoter disputes. They're going to court. We have Ward, Garcia, Robert Guerrero was in it for a while, and I feel like it's kind of the Al Heyman effect going on here. All these fighters are seeing, you know, at least for him, that he can get them the kind of money that his fighters are getting, and maybe they're not necessarily willing to switch their handlers, but, you know, they see that there's more money out there to be had. And do you think that has anything to do with all these fighters, especially some of the more top-tier ones saying, wait a second, over there, I know they're making X, Y, Z. I should be making more of that.
Sean, I'll just say this. Somebody is certainly whispering in their ear. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. And Gabe, how much who was selling Matisse's EPO for this fight? Where did he get all the stamina from?
Oof, no comment. It was kind of interesting that he didn't really get tired. You know, I'm not going to sit here and do the McCarthy as a witch hunt, but I would ask, you know, the reporters that were there, that had access, I don't know, was there USADA testing for this? fight, because there was for Garcia and Matisse, and there wasn't this kind of energy level. But in this fight, I don't know if there was, and there was an incredible punch output. I don't like to throw shade on people like that, but it's consistency, you know, and when you look at once you enter a circle, you should stay in it. It makes sense to me.
That's exactly what I'm saying, because, I mean, I know you've watched his last couple of fights. I think I've seen, like, I started watching Matisse. The first fight I saw was the Jose fight, so I've seen the last, like, three or four, and he's never looked like that good, at least from a stamina perspective, because I thought Molina was laying some leather on him early. It was kind of like, whoa, you know. But it is what it is. Thanks, guys, for taking my call, and have a good one. Enjoy the moment of the Super Bowl pay-per-view, as some people like to call it.
All right, thanks a lot, Sean. Yeah. Gabe, get to this guy, the 505, Face Ventura. He has this great avatar of Sebastian the Ibis with boxing gloves.
And the 505, all about you. You're live on the next round.
Hey, what's 505. Up,
guys? Good, what's going on?
Hey, I was, sorry, I had to yell at Steve there because he's putting a cane on hold over a gator.
Well, I mean, can we speak up? The greasy, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I didn't even know you were online. Jeez.
Well, anyways. Well, I had a couple things, actually, because I've been listening kind of off and on, and so I don't know if you guys have touched on this or not. But I know Danny Garcia is supposed to be moving up to 147, and I know Matisse had said that he wants a rematch. Do you think Danny Garcia would take a rematch, and do you think Lucas Matisse should move up to 147? Because I don't really think there's much, I personally don't think there's much left at 140 for him to do, really. I mean, he's pretty much beat everyone except Garcia, and Garcia's not going to fight at 140.
Matisse made it very clear ringside after the fight on Saturday night that he's going to be at 140 for about another year. So it is what it is, and there are some fights you could still make. And Golden Boy does have a very deep roster between 140 and 147. So you're right. I just don't get the sense that Garcia Matisse is in the cards, at least in the near future.
Yeah, and I didn't think – I mean, I figured that if that fight, if there would be anything that – I mean, if that would happen, it would be, you know, Garcia would want to – we would stay at 140, but that's – I mean, I don't think he'd kill himself to stay at 140 for one more fight, especially against a guy against like Matisse. So I don't see that happening.
Well, Gabe, I'm hearing rumors that he might fight Gabriel Bracero. I mean, come on, really?
Yeah, that's – really? Yeah, I think you kind of hit it right on the head with that comment. I don't know.
Yeah, I had a couple other things. Regarding this Golden Boy Richard Schaefer deal, I'm sure you guys are probably here. I mean, everyone's probably heard at this point, but you know, Oscar's been talking with Arum about getting this Canelo Pacquiao fight. And you know, honestly, I don't think I'm really all that interested in that fight anyway, even if it were to happen. But
no,
how would this work? Like, I mean, could Oscar just go out and start talking with Bob Arum and, you know, make a fight without Schaefer's approval? Like, how would this whole thing work? I mean, is that even a legitimate possibility?
We don't know. I mean, as Gabe mentioned earlier, we'd have to look at the contract and see the parameters of this deal. I mean, I just see, and I retweeted this, where Oscar De La Hoya recently just put out, show your support and let's end this Cold War for the sake of boxing and the fans. I mean, he's certainly come a long way for giving out retweets for those who would cancel HBO last year. So I don't know how that works, but I'll say this. In talking with Schaefer ringside on Saturday night, he is just a guy that's looking for an exit, that wants to, honestly, wants to, but if he got fired, he wouldn't exactly shed any tears, guys. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. It seems to think, I pretty much see him out in the next couple of months. This whole deal with Oscar announcing the whatever the extension, and I don't know what's going on there. That's just bizarre to me. It's entertaining though. I mean, watching the Figueroa fight, I mean, that was the most entertaining thing of the night, was watching Oscar roll in and sit down, and that whole. I mean, I I was scoring that fight pretty closely until they walked in. After that, I think my card started. I think I had given like a round of Belmonte, and then the third round all of a sudden went to Schaefer. So it was kind
of. You know what? All of us at Press Row, the guys that I was around, we were basically asking Belmontes and Figueroa to move the hell out of the way so we could see what the hell was going on with those two guys.
Yeah, that's me. It was kind of funny because I was watching that fight, and it was like, you know, I'm not there live, but I'm like, you know, moving my head around, trying to get around the fighters to see what Schaefer and Oscar are doing. You know, that's how kind of into it I was. It was kind of funny. But anyways, I got one more thing. This fight between Russell and Lomachenko, where do you see, where does the winner go from that? I mean, I tend to think that Gary Russell wins this fight. And I, you know, it's kind of sad because it's like considered his first big step up fight against a guy who's had two professional fights, which is, you know, really kind of sad. But it's like, you know, but regardless, like, you know, who wins, where do they go? I mean, does Russell, you know, quote unquote, step up again and maybe fight someone that's worth a damn? Or, I mean, I really like to be a fan of that guy. I just can't, you know, I just haven't really been able to get behind him because, you know, his competition has been so lame.
Gabe?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's a tease in the business where you just look at him and you think this could be the guy. I mean, watching him offensively, getting to see him live, what I love about him is not just that he's got great technique or that he's super fast, but he's got this aggressive undertone to everything else, you know, all of that nice technique and the straight punching and just the blinding combinations. But he's pressing the attack. He wants to get the guy out of there. He wants to do damage. And then it's just been sporadic, whether the blaming of the hands or just not the right guy and they're passing on opponents and then he's off TV with highlights. I wouldn't go so far because I didn't get to see him in the gym, and you probably disagree here, Steve. But it's almost like a Panchito Bajado, where it's just leaving so much talent sitting on the table for whatever reason.
You know, Gabe, I've talked to people in the D.C. area that are very, very connected. They are certainly within the boxing community, and they'll tell you off the record, they think he's a bit of a front runner. They don't deny his talent, and I've said he's the best pure talent out of that city since Mark Too Sharp Johnson. But he's that guy who's 98% there to being a truly great fighter. Does not have those 2% intangibles that the great ones get. And I think it's really a gut check. And I'm being told that's pretty much set that Lomachenko-Russell will happen June 21st at the StubHub Center. Listen, we got to get going, okay? Thanks for the call.
All right, thanks, guys.
Also, let's get to Domingo in the 718, Gabe. He's been waiting for a while.
You got it. Let me just scroll down to it. In the 718, you are live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Good,
and Domingo, first things first, are you buying the moment or are you listening on the radio?
Well, I'm going to a bar with my wife and some friends to watch the fight.
Oh, then you are watching it. You are paying an extra fee, so that counts.
Yeah. I'm not really looking forward to it because I kind of feel it's a mismatch.
What an indictment. Yeah, you know, I'm going to pay money for it, but, geez, I'm really not looking forward to it.
Listen, I want the guy to get challenged. I think it's just good for boxing. You know, it needs to be challenged. You know, we need these Tavis Whitaker, De La Hoya Trinidad type fight. You know, it's just unbelievable. Like, you know, all these setup mismatches all the time. But, guys, I want to ask you a question about Klitschko. I know you guys are a little bit big on them. But listen, every time I think about these guys, I can only think about Vladimir getting knocked out in those three fights. He lost. The way he lost in those three fights, it was embarrassing. I don't think any top heavyweight have ever lost the way Vladimir has lost in that
Lennox Lewis.
Yeah. Joe Lewis.
I don't know how could you consider them great, because I don't think they have fought anybody, especially Vladimir. I don't think he's fought anybody as good as Sanders since he lost.
Domingo,
I've always
said this. I think he's among the top 10 to 15 heavyweights. I don't put him in my upper echelon, though, and I did reference that. I think his three losses are going to hold him back. But there is something to be said about consistency, and as Gabe pointed out, Who the hell did Joe Louis fight in 25 title defenses that was any good?
I'll get back to you on that one.
Yeah, please.
And he got pulled, you know?
One more thing, guys. I know you guys are not a fan of Ward and Garcia, and I'm not a fan of them either. But don't you think, like, if a fighter doesn't want to be with a promoter, can't they just, those promoters just let them go, find a, like a financial situation, settlement? Because, listen, Bob Arum, Goosen, they played a role in building this guy up. They built their market value, so they need to get compensated. But, you know, to
yes.
hold them and not fight them for, like, you know, to hold them from fighting for a year or two is very detrimental to the boxer and the sport itself. Promoters, they just freeze them.
But here's the problem. See, here's where I have a problem with people who say that. Andre Ward willingly signed an extension about 2 years ago, and guess what? He was also the recipient of a $500,000 signing bonus. They didn't put a gun to his head. This was not coercion. He willingly signed an extension with a $500,000 signing bonus. And I don't think people understand this either. There's a pattern here with Andre Ward. He tried to also leave James Prince a couple of years ago. So who's the common denominator in all this?
Oh, no. I think you have a point. But I think I wish they could just speed up these differences. You know, just get it moving. And, you know, both of them, you know, they take their pride away. And, you know the sport hurts when they don't fight.
But, Domingo, is the sport really hurt when Andre Ward doesn't fight? Is it? I mean, that's serious. Pacquiao doesn't fight. I say, uh-oh. Mayweather doesn't fight. I say, uh-oh. A Klitschko doesn't fight in Europe. I'd be like, uh-oh. If Cotto decides to walk away, I'd be like, ooh, that's a loss. Andre Ward is a heh.
It's also, I think fans that kind of defend, I think their hearts are in the right place, but you're defending the athlete. Like, look, you want this guy to have his rights and be able to make a living and not get frozen. But that's kind of also a team sports mentality. You know, if a guy was brought up to the farm system, let's say the Dodgers, and then eventually it was at a point where he didn't want to be working there and they didn't want him, and so they wanted to part ways, they could trade that guy off if he had value and get something back for it. With a promoter, you spend all those years, all that money, you build a guy's name, and it's kind of an intangible thing. How did he get out of the contract? How are they compensated for what he might have earned? You know, look at how much money Floyd's made after he got out of that contract with Bob Arum, and probably how little money it took to get him out of it in comparison. So I think promoters have a right here as well. And the bottom line is, what are you doing signing a contract and then later calling it an illegal contract? It's almost like they want to make the money and then they know they have this back door out.
Listen, Domingo, we got to get running, okay?
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Here's a question from our friend Robert Palmer. A question for the show. Is Omar Figueroa the weakest belt holder? Other contenders are Hall, Abraham, Mendez, and Butler. That's a tough one. I mean, Figueroa is still relatively young into his championship reign. I'll say this, though, Gabe. He backdoored his way into the title. It's not like he beat an established titleist or a champion to capture that WBC 35-pound title.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me last week, it'd have been Shumanoff,
Oh, yeah, that would have been my choice, too.
He's just going away. There's also Peter Quillen is out there, although I think he seems like a fighter that's going to – it's going to take something to get him out of there. I think Figueroa looks like he's ready to be taken. So I think there's all kinds of problems there. I'm not sure what they are, but he just didn't look like a champion that had his camp and his business in order. He looked like a guy that was lucky to get away with one. He kind of looked like Donaire to me in the decline, kind of making up for it with effort, but there's something wrong in there.
Gabe, 10 minutes here. One quick news and note. Ishae Smith, obviously is not fighting Lara now, who's going on to bigger and better things. They're replacing him on Friday night with Ryan Davis. They are really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Also, Antonio Orozco was scheduled to fight this weekend in Carson, except Martin Onadio, best known for actually beating Johnny Molina, had some visa issues, so that fight has been rescheduled for Del Mar near San Diego on May 15th. That'll be on Fox Sports 1. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
You know, just a quick note on that fight, Ryan Davis. How is this fight even being made? This is kind of disgraceful, this fight. He's a welterweight. He's 35 years old. He's got 13 losses, been stopped 6 times. He's only got 9 knockouts. He hasn't won a fight since 2012,
And that was against somebody that was 3-14-1. Before that, he'd been stopped in 2011. I mean, it just doesn't seem to me that this is a guy that should be fighting. And he's in a 10-round fight, and he hasn't gone 10 rounds, I believe, ever. He's been scheduled? No, he did it once in 2005. This fight has got danger written all over it. So let me go back to the phone lines. We find, I think Javier might be out there. In the 708.
We need to hear that voice. We need to hear that voice.
Hello?
We do.
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on the next round.
Oh, hi, how you doing? This is Eric. I was on call about a question for Schaefer.
Well, he's not on the show right now, but if you want to ask us about him, we're more than definitely trying to answer it.
This way, Mark, my thing is, don't you realize how he looked like a dick? Like, everybody, I felt sorry for him at first. You know, I felt sorry for him. I'm like, HBO said they don't want to work with him. And I'm like, oh, they got to run the Showtime. And now it looked like he's the problem all this time. He's the problem.
Eric,
don't you realize
so
he needs to get fired?
For so long, Bob Arum, and I started the hashtag Blame Bob, everyone said he doesn't want to work with anybody, and he's the cause of the Cold War. That may have been true at one point, but if anyone, and I like Richard, I get along with him, okay? But right now, he's being very, very reckless, and in your words, quote, unquote, being a dick.
Right. I mean, it's like, okay, even if you do go run off with Floyd, right, you run Floyd Company, you got to deal with only Showtime, cause HBO not going to deal with you no more. You've, like, shoving everybody's face in the mud.
I agree, and here's another issue. If he goes off with Heyman or Mayweather, that just creates another subset of the Cold War because you're creating separate leagues. And boxing at its best, Don King, Bob Arum, Dan Duva never really liked each other. But when push came to shove, Eric, they made the fights we wanted. I'm not asking you to be friends all the time. Just make certain fights and get the hell out of the way.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. And I just want one quick thing about Pacquiao. I think that his fight against Bradley, I don't know how Dan had him winning 118, 110. I thought that Bradley won 3-4 first 5 rounds. And I just wondering, like, do you think he should move down and, like, just stay away from Juan Marquez? Because he would get hit with right hands by a guy who can't throw punches correctly.
You know, Freddie said it to me about 4 days after the fight. If I had my druthers, Manny Pacquiao would be at 140. Because if you look at the frame of Manny Pacquiao, he really is a junior welterweight.
Yeah. Okay, man. All right. Thanks for taking my call.
So, Eric, it was short but sweet and explosive. Please join us again.
I'm calling that.
Gabe, let's get to the 702 and Robert Palmer. He's been waiting for a while.
You got it.
Guys, how's it going?
702.
Robert,
how's it going, guys?
Good,
yeah,
good,
I went to the card at the StubHub this weekend, and probably the best fight venue I've ever been to.
Robert, would the Kimster lie? Would the Kimster lie?
No.
Robert, yes or no? Are you buying the moment, or are you listening on the radio?
No, like you, I'm going to head to the movie theater. And,
okay.
I did it for the Canelo fight. It was a great time. I actually like this pay-per-view. I mean, okay, I get it that Maidana's not the greatest opponent of all time, but he's unifying the division, and that's something I always want to see. I can't really hate him for that. At least he's trying to build up the titles and get them unified.
I don't disagree, but Gabe, chime in on this. If you're going to fight Maidana, who fits the blueprint or the template of his past opponents, relatively slow guys, but you're going to unify the division, fine. All right. Well, Keith Thurman and Sean Porter have versions of belts. Are we going to see them in the dance picture? Let's see him face some younger athletic guys.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know. I mean, he's kind of a guy that he picks and chooses. You know, it matters when it's Carlos Baldomir and he can avoid Antonio Margarito, that he's fighting for a linear belt and he can avoid the other belt. You know, we'll see. And then I remember when he fought Hatton, they fought at 47, and I was like, why didn't you fight him at 40? Then you'd be a dual lineal champion, which is a pretty historic thing, 40 at 47. His answer was, I'm the president of boxing. What I say is goes. So we'll see what he says after this fight. I tend to think that he's not going to fight. Well, Sean Porter's being talked about, and that's what I find interesting, that Richard Schaefer would say that would be a good next opponent, because that's not a Golden Boy fighter. That's an Al Haymon fighter only, as is Floyd.
Yes, it is.
That was kind of very telling language from Richard Schaefer. It's hard to say where they go, but Keith Thurman is out there. That's the kind of fight I want to see him in. Amir Khan, it's still a funky matchup, but I like what I like about Thurman and what I think people want to see with Floyd is a guy with speed and power, not just one or the other. Floyd likes to get you either a guy that's fast, fragile, or a guy that hits hard but is slow. Let's see something that looks close.
Robert, are you out in the middle of the street?
Yeah, I am. Sorry if that's too loud, guys. I mean, do you guys not think that? I mean, I've already seen Porter and Thurman's name thrown out there on the forums, and people are already saying, no, they're not ready, that, you know, and already kind of got the ammunition out on Mayweather there. So does he not open himself up for criticism there as well?
He might. But again, who else is realistically available in the business climate that we have right now in boxing? It's not Golovkin. Yeah. He's not going to fight Sergio Martinez. It has to be on a certain side of the fence, and Thurman and Porter are very eligible to be in the Mayweather sweepstakes.
I mean, let's just say that Mayweather, he picks up the WBA title as well as his WBC this weekend. Then he fights Porter in September, and he's got the IBF, the WBC, the WBA. Doesn't that put all the emphasis on Pacquiao to do whatever it takes to make that fight, considering Mayweather has all the belts apart from one, and he's the bigger draw in every sense?
Well, you would think so, but thus far, I don't like the track record. Let's just put it that way. I think Mayweather, and I've said this for a while, this has never been about drug tests. It's never been about who's been afraid of each other. I don't think Floyd Mayweather wants to do business with Bob Arum and vice versa.
There you go. Okay.
Well, we got to get going, okay? We got just a few minutes left.
Okay, enjoy the show.
We got time for one more phone call. Gabe, pick one. Pick us a winner.
Let's see. In the 516, you've been on forever. You're live on the next round. 516.
Hey, Dave, Steve, how's it going? This is Evan from Pennsylvania.
Evan, welcome aboard.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. In regards to the Figueroa fight, I'm the first person when there's a bad decision or a controversial scorecard to go on Twitter, and I think David Mendoza, whose name should be called out, his 118-110 scorecard was quite ludicrous. But at the same time, I cannot feel any sympathy for Belmontis whatsoever. And I'm not one of these people that says you have to take the fight from the champion to win it. But at the same time, you had to be a little more active in the second half of the fight to be eligible for any sort of complaint whatsoever. So my sympathy for him went out the window when he fought the four corners offense.
Evan,
so to speak.
Dean Smith would have been proud of that. I mean, you're right. I mean, I've never agreed with you got to take it from a champion as if a champion has a 3-point lead going into a fight. That's a bunch of malarkey. But you're right. He ran from a fight. And I understand this is professional boxing, and I understand the boxing element. He didn't engage at all the last 6-7 rounds.
And one last quick thing, Steve. I know you guys got to run. But I know you're on Twitter, and I work in the media, and so I'm always interested in this. What is it with boxing writers? And I'm not going to name names with guys that you feuded with, but what's it with boxing writers that they always seem to be feuding with each other on Twitter and other social media? What is it about? What is it about this sort of fraternity that it seems like every day there's a new feud? And
you're right.
Some
I think
the
we've both been guilty.
Guys are in it, but.
Well, no, it's just funny. It's just like the guys who aren't red want the attention of those who are. And I've always said there's two types of writers. There are guys who are red and those who talk about them. Let's just leave it at that.
Fair enough, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
All right. Thank you, Evan. Well, that's it for this week's edition. I got to be honest with you, Gabe. I don't know what it says, but the majority of calls today didn't really bring up Mayweather-Madonna. I find that interesting.
Yeah, I was about to say we went the whole show without a knockdown, but I guess in a way we kind of knocked the moment down. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk about this next Monday. I want to thank everyone that joined the show on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. This is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.